This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Best-selling author Jonathan Coleman joins me in studio, also a local Charlottesvillian, one of our local celebrated authors, and the author of a recent article in the in New York Magazine titled "The Last Don: The I-Man Self-Destruction Came from the Same Internal Drama That Made Him So Compelling." Jonathan, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me back on the show. I think it's been about 6 months.
Has it? No, it hasn't been that long.
Believe it or not, mid-November.
Was it really? Gosh. Well, we'll have to correct that. I can't wait to hear you tell this story to folks, for folks who have not read the article. And it's very easy to find online. Just Google Jonathan Coleman Imus is probably the quickest way. And it's the first thing that comes up. Tell us, you actually knew Don Imus and worked with him.
Yes. When I was a book editor at Simon & Schuster, I actually inherited Don's mostly unwritten manuscript from another author, from another editor who had left Simon & Schuster. And I didn't really know his radio show very, very much at the time, but I began listening to it as I began getting to know Don and his sidekick, Charles McCord, the newsman who sort of collaborated with Don on a lot of things. And I knew Don actually at a very low point in his life, a point in which he was struggling mightily with alcohol, with cocaine, with all sorts of things. And it was a miracle, really, that he was able to be on the radio every morning and get through his show, given all the other demons that he was dealing with.
Wow, gosh. And of course, what we should say is that Don Imus, of course, in the news lately because of his comments regarding the Rutgers women's basketball team, which very quickly became overshadowed by the incidents in Blacksburg. We went from, you know, talking about Don Imus's career, and instantly we weren't talking about it anymore. And we're, of course, naturally talking about the lives that were slaughtered at Virginia Tech. Some things were still unsaid about Don Imus. I, for one, am one of those who would like to have seen him stay on the radio for the simple fact that he was one of the people, the only people in the mainstream media who talked a lot about autism. And he also did a lot of great work for children to his camp. I mean, work.
Did a lot of amazing work for kids with cancer, children with autism. He was very devoted to the dilemma of SIDS. Don is a very complicated guy, and I didn't know I was going to write about Don until Wednesday morning, April 11th. I am somebody who doesn't like piling on of any kind, whether it's piling on of Don Imus or anybody. I'm just naturally opposed to any sort of lynch mob of any kind. And I could see what was happening. And it felt like it was going to be a brush fire with no relief in sight. It was in a slow news period. It started to kick up just before the Easter weekend. And by Wednesday morning, I felt that I wasn't likely to read any pieces that were dramatically different from any other ones. And everybody was piling on, or people were very silent. Prominent journalists who had been on his show, who had made their reputations on elevated their reputations on his show, were being very quiet, other than maybe Evan Thomas of Newsweek was saying, "I don't like what he said, but I don't think he should be fired." Same with Tom Oliphant said that. But other people said nothing until, you know, days later.
Why do you think that was, that so many people stayed quiet when, of course, none of us like what he said?
I would like to believe that none. There are a lot of other things that he said that I didn't like either.
Tell us, Jonathan, he's been saying that stuff for a long time. I mean, that's how he made his career.
He's been saying those things for a very long time. He's been reprimanded for those things in the past. He was exiled from New York in the 70s and sent to the dreaded Cleveland, as he saw it, the mistake by the lake. He was then brought back from Cleveland, presumably redeemed. But as he got bigger, he began to take even more and more chances. And I think that's something that's not just peculiar to Don Imus. The bigger somebody gets, the more immune they come to believe they are. They get too big. They don't think anything will take them down. And this is something, because of the object of his comments, the Rutgers University basketball team. I mean, it's one thing to go after John McCain or even mercilessly kid a Barack Obama or a Hillary Clinton. It's another thing to take a group of women, 19, 20, 21 years old, who have just sort of risen to national prominence and sort of take them down with a, you know, this remark. I can repeat it. I don't know if you want me to, but
no,
I can,
it's okay.
You know, to call them nappy-headed hoes. I don't even think Don was thinking. I mean, I know him to not be a racist person. I mean, I'm more outraged, frankly, and I tried to say this in the article, and if I'd had more space, I would have said more about the Reverend Al Sharpton never really having gotten his comeuppance, in my opinion, for the Tawana Brawley hoax that was perpetrated. I mean, I'm somebody who spent 7-8 years of my life writing on race in America, and I have always felt that people like Sharpton are much, much more the problem than they are the solution. And I would have liked to have said more about Al Sharpton in that article.
And how ironic it was, and sadly ironic, that Don Imus has to crawl to the feet of Al Sharpton and ask for forgiveness. That was just the cruelest irony.
Well, you know, I ran into a friend of mine the other day, a journalist who probably has been on this show, Donovan Webster.
Yes, he was on last week.
Oh, was he? And I hadn't seen him, as you know, as your listeners know, Don is travels around the world. And I bumped into him at the Boar's Head just on Tuesday, and he said, I see you had a piece in New York Magazine, which I've now read. And I said, I guess Imus is our designated sufferer. And I knew what he meant by that. You know, he has to carry all of this for a period of time. He's our vehicle for this. And whether you agree with that or not, it's certainly worthy of discussion. And you have me on the show. And then yesterday, the news came out that he's planning to file a big lawsuit against CBS. He wants his money being $40 million. He's hired the top First Amendment lawyer in the country, Marty Garbus. Whether he'll be successful or not, I think will turn on the fine print of that contract, because ultimately the argument I think CBS will make is he was using public airwaves to say this. His argument is that's part and parcel of why I'm there, to be a provocateur. And I don't know how that's going to ultimately, you know, play out, but he's obviously not going to go away quietly.
And there's been some contention in the press that his contract even stipulates that he's supposed to get on the airwaves and press buttons and, as you say, be a provocateur.
I think it's going to depend on how widely leaked the contract is as they try to make their argument.
You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. We are talking with best-selling author Jonathan Coleman live in studio, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Terry is on line one. Terry, thanks for the call. You're on with Jonathan Coleman. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for the call.
Good. I'm a native New Yorker, and I now live in Virginia. And I listen to news radio and talk radio on both New York and Virginia. And my question is, would the media and everybody be latching on to this if Rutgers had won the national championship and Don Imus had called the Tennessee Volunteers, like a bunch of nappy-headed hoes and white trash trailer trash?
Well, Terry, his comment at the time was he actually, in their victory, he was much more complimentary to the Tennessee team. You know, he was trying to make a distinction. He was looking back to a Spike Lee movie to basically say this was a more preferable, as it were, a more appealing, if you will, group of black women than the Rutgers team. Am I misunderstanding your question?
No. What I'm saying is he didn't give Rutgers any credit. I would have loved to have seen Rutgers win the national championship because they had never been there before.
Right.
You know, I'm like I said, I'm a New York native, you know, and I think it's, you know, I give credit to them, you know, for going to small schools, state universities, instead of going with the, you know, high-profile Pat Summit-run Tennessee Volunteers, who all kind of are expected to get there.
I agree, and that was what was so unfortunate about Imus's comments, is that it took the air out of the room of these women who had fought so hard to get to where they were, only to fall short. And they fell quite short in the championship game, but it didn't take away from their run. What unfortunately took away from their run was
right.
Don's comments.
Terry,
what I was trying to say was, would everybody be so up in arms if he had said, instead of saying that the Tennessee women were like so cute and pretty and the Rutgers women were a bunch of nappy-headed hoes, had the Rutgers won, would he have said that the Rutgers women were pretty and the Tennessee Volunteers were white trash, trailer trash?
He might have. You never know with Imus.
You
don't know.
Would people be upset with him if he called them white trash?
I am still hoping he's going to call in the program. I left a message for him. He has the phone number, and that he may be the next phone call, and I hope that I can surprise Coy with that.
Wouldn't that be great? Terry, thank you so much. We appreciate the call. We're talking with Jonathan Coleman, the author of a recent article in New York Magazine. You can read it online. And Jonathan, read us an excerpt from the article that you wrote about your old friend Don Imus.
I'm going to read two paragraphs, and I think one of the things that made this piece stand out from other pieces, and I'm not saying that other people have said that in letters to New York and other comments I've gotten, is that I was writing about the person that I got to know off the air. Everybody was writing about the person who made comments, but maybe without the context and the background to get maybe a fuller understanding. He's a very complicated individual. And I'll read this section that referred to the time when I first met him, and as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, at a low point in his life. Don was smoking and drinking heavily at the time. We would go out to lunch, and he would insist on rolling rocks, being put into a bucket by the table as if they were champagne, and doing drugs, living hard, barely sleeping, and eating little. I saw him as an American drifter, a loner, who might have been Gary Gilmore had he not found his way to the honeypot of success that he constantly worried he was going to fuck up. He was 40 at the time, divorced, pretty much estranged from his four daughters, and someone who found great comfort in reading voraciously long into the night when he was coherent enough to do so. If he talked about an author's book on the air, he didn't phone it in from the pool. He had read it. That I knew from direct experience. Anyway, I had an editorial assistant at the time who was anorexic, though she insisted she wasn't. And no sooner had Don met her than he announced, in a voice loud enough for the entire 14th floor of Simon and Schuster, his words, to hear, "Coleman, I want you to order that girl a pizza with everything on it, right away. Don't argue with me." He could be like that, outlandish and caring at once. But beneath all the outward bravura and shtick and locker room noise, I saw someone deeply insecure who was reluctant to make eye contact, awkward, shy, uneasy in his own skin. His father had been an alcoholic, and so was he, though he eventually found sobriety. Don was a former Marine, a miner, a gas station attendant, a prankster, calling up a McDonald's in Sacramento once and ordering 1,200 hamburgers from his perch at KXOA, a wannabe rock star with long hair and hooded, bloodshot eyes who favored shiny jackets when he wasn't in his usual cowboy garb of big hats, denim jackets, and expensive boots. He was all that and something more. A walking time bomb, completely incorrigible, his own worst enemy, but who, at the same time, would do anything for you, anything he possibly could.
Jonathan Coleman reading from his recent article in the New York Magazine titled "The Last Don," about his friend Don Imus.
I felt that I wanted to just give him some humanity and just to give people a context in which to view him. I mean, people have a public face, and he had a very, very public face and a public voice on the radio in all his incorrigibleness. But there was a person behind that, and I wanted to try to flesh that out because I could see which way this thing was going. It just seemed with each passing minute he was going to be fading away, though I actually think he will be back.
Well, that was my next question. Are we going to hear him on XM, or is he? You think another network is? He's in talks with another network.
I think in the fall he'll be back, and if his spokesperson Bo Dietl is to be believed, he'll be back on, not on satellite radio, but as Bo says, back on Terra Firma radio. it's hard to know. I think he will be back. I think people will miss him. I think they'll miss the high level of discourse that went on that station with politicians and authors when he wasn't devolving into the other stuff. And
that's what I think most people who don't listen to Imus, and I did, and I actually used to watch him in the mornings on MSNBC, I was shocked at the folks that would be on his program. I mean, these were the heavy power hitters out of New York and Washington. They would get on the program, and it was a different kind of interview than you heard them doing anywhere else, whether it was a reporter or a presidential candidate. They spoke with Don Imus differently than any other media outlet.
And for the politicians, they spoke in an unbuttoned kind of way that hardly any
politician ever
does. He created an atmosphere that enabled them to do that, and I think that they were starting to speak that way before they even realized that they were speaking in an unhandled, unsoundbite type way, and they were almost liberated by that.
Yeah.
You know, in a way.
He let it be known that there was, you know, the time is too short here. There's no BS. Call a spade a spade. Don't hand me your speech.
He wouldn't allow for any spin on the show.
Right, right.
He wouldn't allow for that at all. One thing I found interesting, Sam Tannenhaus, who's the editor of the New York Times Book Review, wrote a mea culpa of sorts, as did Frank Rich, on Sunday the 15th. And one thing Tannenhaus said was, he said, look, I went on the show because this guy every day was talking about my biography of Whitaker Chambers that, you know, I hadn't even known he was talking about it till somebody told me. And he said, I was impressed. He said, that guy had read that book more carefully than anybody else I had met in New York or anywhere in the country. Not only that, he loved the book so much that he would keep talking about it every day, incessantly, obsessively. And every day he talked about it, he sold more books for Sam Tannenhaus.
Jonathan Coleman, the author of a recent article in New York Magazine about his friend Don Imus. You can read it online. Just Google Jonathan Coleman and Imus. That'll be the first one you see there. Jonathan, thank you, and let's not let another 6 months go by before you rejoin me on the program.
I'll be back as soon
as you promise
me.
You promise?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's a deal.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.